saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Gift, was written by Joseph Mendel.
Yes?
Good evening, sir. My name is Reza Shepherd.
Happy to know you, Mr. Shepherd. Won't you come in?
No, thank you. Not tonight, sir. I only came to... Well, sir, where I come from, that's Virginia, there's a saying. Give a man a week to settle in his new house and another week to get curious about his neighbors. Then go and give him welcome. So, welcome to New Orleans.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. You're very neighborly.
It's true what they say, that you're from New England.
They?
People talk about a newcomer. You are a New Englander? Of course, anyone could tell who heard you speak.
Is it so noticeable?
But I never would have thought that...
What else do they say about me?
Well, you don't look like a Jew.
I see. Is there a special way a Jew should look?
Well, I don't rightly know. I've never seen one. And you're the first in New Orleans.
Maybe he should wear a long cloak and a flowing beard and walk like Moses.
Oh, believe me, sir, I meant no offense.
And I take no offense, Mr. Shepherd. You did come to welcome me. But there is something I would like you to understand.
No, please, there's no...
I was born in Newport, Rhode Island, on the eve of the Battle of Bunker Hill. And my earliest recollections are of the synagogue where my father was the rabbi.
Well, you owe me no explanations.
I have never thought very much about it. Mr. Shepherd, you see me as I am. And there is nothing remarkable about me, either as an American or as a Jew. Nothing remarkable at all.
This is what he said to me in 1802, a year before Mr. Jefferson purchased the Louisiana Territory from Napoleon. But he was wrong, for in your day, 100 years after his death, he is remembered in synagogues from the Atlantic to the Mississippi. His name is inscribed on hospitals, in the streets and parks and libraries of more than one city. His name was Judah Turow. Yet there was truth in his words. You will understand that I can say this since Judah Turow was my friend. He was not a poet, or a statesman, or a leader of armies, or a scientist. He had no genius. There was nothing of brilliance in his life. He was simply an enterprising, industrious, energetic merchant and shipowner who managed to build a sizable fortune, which he spent as he pleased. And this disturbed a certain Mr. John McDonough.
You're a rich man, Mr. Turow, perhaps the richest in New Orleans. After me, of course.
If you say so, Mr. McDonough. For myself, I have no desire to count another man's money.
Well, the possession of wealth brings responsibility.
I'm happy to hear you say that, sir.
Are you? Then I haven't made myself clear. Mr. Turow, yesterday the ladies of the orphan's home came to see me.
They visited me the day before.
Exactly. They told me the amount of your contribution.
Why, I expressly asked them not to make it public.
They told me that's not public. Last week it was directors of the Seaman's Home, and in the past months the Firemen's Charitable Association, Ladies Benevolent Society, and there was St. Anna's Asylum for the Relief of Destitute Females. Mr. Turow, You're being very inconsiderate.
I do the best I can.
Yeah, you make it hard for the rest of us. That is to say, for men of standing and property.
Do I?
Of course. Now, these people expect me to give to every cause to which you contribute. And at least as much money.
Oh, perhaps more, Mr. McDonough, since I'm only, as you say, the second richest man in New Orleans.
Charity begins at home, sir. You have no family. I work to support my wife and children.
They would be destitute otherwise?
Nonsense. If I were to die tomorrow, they'd be ahead. You're changing the subject, sir. Miss Turo, there are other ways of spending money. There's your house, for example, if it's too small, for one thing.
I'm comfortable in it.
And your clothes do not befit a man of means. Your lack of servants...
Mr. McDonough, I do not count your money, nor tell you how to spend it. In short, I mind my own business.
This is my business.
No, sir. Unless...
Unless what, Mr. Turo?
Unless you wish to follow my example. In which case, I shall be happy to instruct you.
But there were precious few who followed Judah Turo's example. He was the first in his store every morning and the last to leave at night. Yet he always found time to listen and to help, whether it was the chairman of a board of trustees or a man without shoes. And therefore he was, I think, after all, a remarkable man. There was one time when Judah Turo was not able to give what was in his heart to give. You'll not find it written as I'll tell it, but it began on a day when he went to meet one of his ships, just docked, and spoke to the captain.
You made good time, Captain.
Aye, sir. We had fair winds all the way.
And the cargo?
No damage, Miss Turo. It's been unloaded now.
Good. There will be a bonus, Captain.
Aye, thank you kindly, sir.
Not at all. You've earned it. Who is this, Captain?
Kind of bonus for you, Mr. Turo.
I do not consider this a joking matter.
Aye, sir. He's a runaway slave. They caught him in Baltimore just as we were getting ready to sail. The owner ordered him shipped back here. What I meant by a bonus for you, sir, I got a passenger rate for him.
Oh? Listen to me, Captain, and listen closely. Under no circumstances are you ever to take such cargo again.
What, Mr. Turo?
Under no circumstances whatsoever. Take his chains off, Captain.
Well, I can't do that, sir. He's a runaway slave.
He's half starved. Did your master treat you badly? You don't have to be afraid to talk.
Oh, Captain! You brought back that good-for-nothing houseboy of mine.
What are you going to do to him, Mr. McDonough?
Do? What do you expect, Mr. Turo? I'd teach him not to run away again.
I asked you a question. What are you going to do to him?
Mr. Turo, didn't you say you were not interested in how I disposed of my property?
I am talking about a human being.
Who, Tom? I paid for him. He's my property. Captain, I'd appreciate it greatly if you sent one of your men along with me just
in case... Mr. McDonough, how much do you want for him?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Turo?
I want to buy Tom from you.
Oh, no, you don't want a no-account rascal like Tom. Now, I got one or two men I can spare, full-grown, strong, not scrawny like this one
How
here.
How much, Mr. McDonough?
Well, sir, I paid $125 for him some years ago. And what with newspaper notices when he run away, his passage back...
Don't drag it out.
$200. Don't say I didn't warn you.
You'll have your money this afternoon. The chains, Captain.
I have the key, sir.
This is the way you do business, Mr. Turo. You won't last long.
Come, Tom. Let's go home. Is this the first time you've run away, Tom? What were you going to do, Tom? Where were you heading for? The kitchen is through there. Get yourself something to eat. Did they give you anything to eat on board ship?
Just bread and water.
You must be very hungry.
I've been hungry before. Well,
when you want it, there's food in the kitchen. Tom, why won't you talk to me?
You the master. You tell me what to do, I'll work.
Didn't you know they'd send you back, even if you got to New York or Boston?
I heard of a place up north called Canada.
More than 2,000 miles of running, hiding. You must have wanted to get away very badly.
Well, Mr. McDonough, he not a hard master.
Still, you ran away.
He the master.
And you'll run away again, won't you? Won't you, Tom?
I ain't aiming to be nobody's slave no more.
No, Tom. Will you hand me the pen and ink there, please, and a sheet of paper? Thank you. I, Judah Toro, having duly purchased and being the lawful owner... There. Take it, Tom.
You want me to deliver the paper to somebody?
It's for you.
For me?
Don't lose it. If anybody asks you, you show it to him.
What for? What'd it say?
It says you're a free man, Tom.
You mean...
Tom?
I can walk out of here? Right now?
Right now, if you want to.
I ain't nobody's slave no more. I'm a free man.
Tom? Tom?
Yes, sir, Mr. Toro?
What are you doing here? That paper I gave you yesterday.
Right here in my pocket. I just chopping some firewood for the stove.
You don't have to do that.
Yes, sir. Won't take but a minute. Oh, you mean you's trying to read with all that noise?
No, I said what I mean. You don't have to chop wood for me or do anything for me. Do you understand, Tom?
No, sir. You give me a paper yesterday.
That's right.
Papers say I was a free man.
You are.
Well, the wood needs chopping. As a free man, why can't I chop it?
All right. Chop the wood. Only I'll pay you for it.
No, sir, Mr. Turrell. You done already paid.
I can't have anyone work for me unless I pay him.
But I... You pay me, Mr. Turrell.
Yeah, that's sensible. You'll get regular wages every Friday. Well, what are you waiting for, Tom? No loafing when you work for wages.
You give Mr. McDonough a lot of money.
I can afford it.
Then you turn around and give me that paper.
It was my ship that brought you back. That's no answer, is it?
I don't know, sir.
This book I was reading, Tom, do you know what it is?
It's all the same to me.
The Bible.
The Bible. I heard the preacher talking about it.
Listen, Tom. This is what it says. Thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt.
Mr. Turrell, someday I'm going to learn how to read that book real good. Giving me too much money, Mr. Turrell.
It's your usual weekly wage, Tom.
Well, Monday and Wednesday, I didn't come here till afternoon.
Well, you did your work.
If you don't mind, Mr. Turrell, I can't take what ain't coming to me.
If that's how you want it.
Yes, sir. You ain't asked me where I went Monday and Wednesday morning.
You only work for me, Tom. If you want to tell me, you will.
Well, I asked Reverend Clapp could I stand in back of the schoolroom and just listen. You know the little room over the church?
Yes, I know.
Well, the little ones, they's learning their ABCs. Me, I just listen. Except after a while, I start saying it soft like to myself. A, B, C, D, E. I ain't learned but only up to E.
It takes time.
But you know, well, maybe you laugh if I tell you.
I won't laugh.
They take the ABCs and put them together and make a word. And then they take a lot of words and put them together, and it's a book or a newspaper. And a person could read them.
Tom. They're always reading a newspaper.
Well, how am I going to learn if I don't read, Sarah?
Why can't you rest at night like a man should? It's that Mr. Turo. He put the reading in your head.
Ain't nobody making me do this. Oh, I'm sorry, Sarah. I didn't mean to bite your head off. All right. No more reading.
Tom, honey, tell me how it's going to be when we go away.
Well, I told you, Sarah. We got to wait.
I know, but tell me again.
Well, after we get married...
By a preacher? A real marrying preacher?
Sure. Then we go up north. Maybe to Boston. Yep, we'll go to Boston.
But it's cold up there, ain't it?
Well, what if it is? I'll buy a dress made of wool.
A blue dress made of lamb's wool? How long will it take us to get there?
I don't know. It took more than a month when they caught me in Baltimore. To Boston, maybe 2 months, maybe more.
Say 2 months. And then what?
Well, I'm pretty handy making things. Maybe I'll set me up a carpenter shop. I'll work and you keep house. And on a fine evening, we'll walk in the streets and look at everybody. And there won't be nobody to tell us what to do and what not to do.
Oh, it's so good the way you tell it. Tom, honey, don't be cross if I say something.
It ain't no use, Sarah. You know what I'll say.
Why can't we go right away? Tomorrow.
Because we can't, that's why.
It's no reason. You've got to tell me a reason.
I ain't ready to go. All the reason I can tell you.
I'm free like you, and it ain't nothing to keep us here in New Orleans.
Now listen to me, Sarah. I got a paper that says I'm free. Sarah... I ain't free to go. Not yet.
Tom! You there, Tom!
Yes, sir, Mr. McDonough.
Come along with me, Tom. Well, come on. Well,
I'm sorry, Mr. McDonough, sir. I'm working for Mr. Turo now.
Well, I know that. I want you to do some work for me. My roof needs shingling. I'll pay Mr. Turo for your time.
Well, I don't mean no disrespect, sir. Only if I work for you, you got to pay me, not Mr. Turo.
What? Well, I suppose you're right. Well, then I'll pay you.
I can come day after tomorrow.
Out of the question. I want you today.
I can't, Mr. McDonough. I got to finish the woodshed for Mr. Turo.
The woodshed can wait. My roof is leaking.
I can come day after tomorrow.
I'll speak to Turo about this.
It won't make no difference, sir.
You be careful, Tom. You wouldn't want me to think that you're being insolent.
No, sir. Only it ain't right to leave any work in the middle without finishing.
You've changed, Tom.
I work for wages now, Mr. McDonough.
All right. You come day after tomorrow. If you do a good job, I got a pair of shoes for you, good as new. And you can pick the fattest hen in my chicken coop.
Mr. McDonough, sir, you pay me regular wages.
You're mighty independent, aren't you?
Not yet, sir, but I aims to be.
Tom, I never thought much of you when you belonged to me. I think I like you even less now.
Yes, sir. You don't have to like me, sir. You just have to pay me. Regular wages, cash money.
Tom worked for anyone who'd pay him regular wages in cash money. I used to see him often around Judah Turo's house, where there was always work for him. And I used to wonder why he worked so much harder than he had need to, and what he was doing with the money he earned. But I could never talk about it with my friend.
A man is entitled to his private thoughts, Shepard, to his private motives. If you take that away, you make a slave of him.
For a man who spent so much of his wealth and so much of his time in public giving, Judah Turo was jealous of his privacy, and he respected the privacy of others.
If Tom is working hard, he has his reasons. And if he wants to tell me, he will.
Mr. Turo, this is Sarah.
Sarah?
I heard a lot about you, Mr. Turo.
We're going to get married.
Well, I'm happy to hear that, Tom. I must think of a special wedding present.
Oh, please, sir. That ain't why we came here.
Why, of course not.
We've been talking a long time about getting married. But Tom, he always say when I'm ready, we go to Mr. Turo. Then we get married. That's all he says. He don't tell me why.
If there's anything I can do, Tom.
Ain't nothing you can do, Mr. Turner. I brought you something belongs to you. You paid Mr. McDonough $200. I'm giving it back.
That's not mine, Tom.
You give me a paper. Seems like a long time ago. It says I'm free.
There were no strings attached.
A paper can't make me free. Can't make me feel free. Mr. Turo, I've been reading a little. I've been reading the Bible. Bible says I'm free. But Mr. McDonough, he used to own me like I was a horse or a pig.
Not anymore, Tom.
There ain't no chains on me no more.
Well, then why don't you keep the $200?
You're a good man, Mr. Turo. And I don't want to say nothing to hurt your feelings. But you're trying to do something you just can't do. If you got the right to set me free, Mr. McDonough got the right to buy me and own me.
Give me the money, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Thank you. Well, I guess I'm ready now, Sarah.
Tom's going to be my husband, Mr. Turrell. And I don't know if I understand it. But I thank you, too. And goodbye.
Sarah, there's something I ain't told you. Maybe I didn't know it myself till just now. Sarah, we ain't going away.
But you promised, huh?
I know. That was before. Sarah, it don't make no difference where you is, Boston or New Orleans. Just so long as you're free. Just so long as you make yourself free.
Shepard, We've been friends a long time. Tell me what to do.
With the $200? You know what you'll do, my friend. You'll give it away to someone who needs it.
I suppose so. It's easy to do that.
Well, some people don't find it so easy.
If the orphanage roof leaks, if a synagogue needs a new Torah, I'm happy to give the money. But, Shepard, Tom said, I'm trying to do something I just can't do.
You have no cause to blame yourself, Toro. You did Tom no injury.
Maybe not, Shepard. Maybe not. Only, how easily a man forgets the limitations of being human.
This was my friend, Judah Turo, who gave so generously all his life to the Turo Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, the Turo Synagogue and the Turo Infirmary in New Orleans, libraries and the park, the Jewish congregations, and the Christian churches that received his gifts. His monument is not one, but many. If I have said that he was in no way remarkable, you must not believe me, for Judah Turo took back a gift he gave, and understood that some things cannot be given, but must be won by each man for himself.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Benjamin S. Stern, former president of the Laurelton Jewish Center in Laurelton, Long Island. Mr. Stern.
The moving drama we have just heard brings to our attention the basic differences in human behavior. Here we have three major characters, each with a completely different background, aims, hopes, and aspirations. The slave owner, a product of a completely materialistic era, hard, ruthless, always trying to get the last measure of value for what he believes is his due. truly a man devoid of human sympathy and kindness. The slave, by refusing to accept his liberty as a gift, insisting that he earn his freedom and self-respect, portrays one of man's finest moments. Judah Turow's nobility vividly reflects a background of wholesome environment. Reared in a home that was dedicated to the service of God, where his rabbi father preached religion, Judah lived it. He knew that the R in religion may be said to consist of three things: reason, reverence, and righteousness. I put reason first, for in these times, which are days preeminently days of science, religion too, to command respect and have influence, must be based on reason. But religion must also be reverent. Reverence is the very soul of religion. It is the feeling or emotion aroused by our contact with the universe. And last, but not least, true religion must stress righteousness. For righteousness is religion in action. Reverence may be the root, but righteousness most certainly is the fruit.
Thank you, Mr. Stern. Our Eternal Eye drama today, The Gift, was written by Joseph Mindell. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Carl Weber as Judah Turow, Maurice Ellis as Tom, John McGovern as the captain, Wendell Holmes as Mr. McDonough, and Betty Burkhart as Sarah. Paul McGrath was the narrator. The music was written by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Catons. This has been an NBC Radio Network production, directed by Edward King. Mel Brand speaking. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.